2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Friday out there to you. This is the NBA Daily Dispatch brought to you by the good folks over at DFSArmy.com. If you're not a member over there with us, sign up now using the promo code PODCAST. Gets you 20% off each month of your subscription. Comes out to $16 a month. With that, you get 24/7 access to our Slack channel, Boomer's Ballers cheat sheet each day, projections, and also the Domination Station, which is basically printing money for all of our members. Once again, that's the DFSArmy.com. Use the promo code PODCAST. I'm your host, Al Walsh. You can find me on Twitter at 14a.walsh. And in the cockpit along with me, as always, it's Keith Hall. You can find him at Boomer's DFS Daddy. Keith, it's not our typical game-by-game breakdown today, more of a strategy session. I like the idea here for this Friday here, but what sorts of things are we covering today?
Yeah, it's something. We've got a lot of new members to the DFS Army and Slack chat, and, you know, it's every once in a while you've got to break up the monotony. You know, we do game-by-game breakdowns, you know, 5 days a week, and, you know, we're kind of grinding out this NBA season, wishing that the All-Star break was at the beginning of February instead of towards the back end of February. But every once in a while, you know, you start to get a lot of questions and stuff, and this is just going to be a nice little kind of refresher course, how we kind of attack things, where we like to attack things, how we approach, you know, short slates and how we approach bigger slates, and, you know, how do we do single entry rosters and game theory questions. And, you know, so we've got a nice litany of questions today. We're going to tie it into today's slates. So you're going to get a couple nuggets here and there, but I just felt with the new influx of members, with the new Domination Station up and going, with David being brought on board, with his article, your article, you know, the Domination Station, my cheat sheet, that it's a little bit long overdue. And it's a way kind of just to infuse some energy back into us, because let's make no mistake about it, sir. Last night was a cluster, and I'm being very nice on that. Last night was not. If you profited, consider it a win. If you broke even, consider it a win. If you barely. Missed breaking even and you got any of your money back, consider it a win, because I know a lot of bigger named, higher quality DFS players that had a bad night last night. A bad night. So
yeah, it's just something as simple as fading, you know, Dwight Powell or anybody who basically wasn't Eric Bledsoe, Russell Westbrook, or Jameer Nelson at point guard last night.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple other good ones, but for the most part, you know, if you avoided the Dwight Powell, Seth Curry, and there was our Enes Kanter, then you sure probably did pretty well last night.
Indeed. All right, let's get to some of these questions here. We'll open it up. I'm just going to go from the top of how you sent them down to me. This one's from Voodoo Man 02. He says, hey Keith, question concerning roster construction. I'm wanting to build three lineups total for the three entry max. Should all three lineups be built around a core of three to four players, or am I missing something here?
This is kind of my bread and butter because I like to do a lot of, you know, two-entry, three-entry tournaments. I like to do these, especially on FanDuel. I'll build a cash-type lineup where I've got my, you know, my good, you know, confident plays in me. And then I'll build a, you know, a fade all the chalk type lineup, and then I'll go from there. But I, to build three entries, I kind of, I don't go three or four and keep and get them in all three of them. You know, unless it's a shorter slate and we've got like, you know, like last night, like four games for Russell Westbrook, I would have put him in all four or all three lineups. Just because, you know, even at that price, his ceiling is so much higher than almost everybody else on the slate. And it's usually not even close when it's short games. But on a slate like tonight where it's 10 games, you know, say you pick a couple value options, you know, that we've had out, or that we have, tonight, you know, and you go, I'm trying to think here. Say, let's just go to the small forward position. Say you go, you know, Otto Porter versus Atlanta, you know, and he's part of, you decide that he's going to be part of your core. And then, you know, Nicholas Batum in Madison Square Garden against New York, and he's part of your core. And then, you know, you go down and David Lee, since he's been getting a lot of run with Pau Gasol, he becomes a part of your core. And you pick like five guys. And usually those five guys will, you know, be one at each position. And I'll put a combination of three to four of them in each lineup, making sure that none of them are in more than just two. And then I'll fill in the rest. I usually kind of go with, pick a couple high price guys out of your core. You know, your Anthony Davises, your LeBron James, your James Harden, Giannis, stuff like that. And then, you know, pick some mid range and some value guys. So kind of mix it up. You know, you don't want, you don't want to have more than six guys in your core in a three entry max, but you don't want to have it three to where, you know, to have three people as a core in your three entry max would require you putting either two in just two of them or going all in on all of them. And I don't think with, you know, with the way that injuries happen, with the way that late scratches can happen, I don't feel like that's a way to kind of attack NBA. It's different for a guy like Westbrook because we know he's going to play. He does not take days off. It's just not his, it's not what he does, but, you know, with a lot of the other, you know, with a lot of the rest of the league, we don't have that same certainty. So, I would try to, you know, make sure that none of, that nobody is in more than two of the three of the three lineups and build more around a core of like five to six.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a situation that I'm not familiar with. I kind of, yeah, I look, I do play one lineup, but I do different slates. So, you know, especially like tonight, you know, I'm probably going to have, you know, one long shot entry in the main slate. And then typically what I've been doing lately is just breaking them down. So all the 7:30 games, all the 8 o'clock games, and then, you know, we were just talking a little bit about it before we did hit the record button, but, you know, there's only that one 10 o'clock game all by itself, so I don't even know if that's going to be involved on most of these express slates. Even if it is, you know, whatever, I'll throw it in there even if it is, but again, I'm just rolling with one lineup for each slate, so not going to be much help on this one.
Let me well, you kind of can because, you know, I've been starting to kind of dabble. I used to just be a main slate only. I used to hate the short slates. I thought they were cop-outs, especially for guys with, like, optimizers and stuff, you know, where you just basically optimize your top three or four lineups and went at it. But when you're approaching, multiple slates, say you've got a guy in your core where he is, say it was Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum, or if Mo Harkless is out, say Evan Turner. Okay, we'll go Evan Turner. You know, he's obviously in that later Portland game. What do you do if – do you have a problem putting in the same guy in multiple slates?
I think it kind of goes to the even multi-entry. You know, like if you like a certain player, you're going to have a certain percentage of exposure to him, you know, across all your different lineups. So, but yeah, that's not uncommon at all. Who's like Harden, I guess, tonight would be a guy that I would have on the main slate. And then, yeah, also have him in that 8 o'clock express slate. Like, yeah, I mean, look, I've done it before where I've mixed it up and, you know, made sure that I had some exposure to everything. But yeah, that's like putting a gun to my head. I don't like doing that. I like going all in on somebody. So,
okay. I just didn't know if like, you know, if you were kind of like on a fringe of a guy, obviously, you know, if you would consider them part of your core, then, you know, you'd obviously build around them. But, you know, where you would really, because we talk about how we really like guys on like 4 or 5 game slates, but on a 10 game slate, we don't feel like we need to go there. Well, when you break them down, I could see when you're breaking them down in like the express slates and stuff, that kind of changes the view of how much you could actually like somebody depending on the position scarcity as well.
Sure. All right, let's get to the next one. My favorite asshole from the DFS Army, Big Daddy Kang. We don't hate each other. We just call each other assholes. But he says now he plays on DraftKings. He said, is it worth it to pay $11,000 plus, I'm assuming, for a player? When looking at the GPP winners, I'm usually seeing more balanced lineups unless it's a small slate. I haven't really seen a winner with Russ or Harden on a slate of 6 games or more in the tournaments I'm in. On FanDuel, when I see lineups, it seems like pricing is much softer, so you can fit more studs in. However, on DK, paying that much can cripple your lineup. I think that's dead on. You know, I mean, on FanDuel, yeah, you need a Russ and a Harden basically every night to be in the winner's circle. But I'm not totally foreign to DK, but I do know that you'd have to go with a much more balanced lineup. So he's dead on here.
Yeah, I agree with him. DK's pricing is softer now. It has gotten a little bit better, you know, in the last couple days. Or last week or so, but you know, it's kind of one of those things that unless there's like some major value, where like if you go get a James Harden who today is 12-6, and then you go down and let's use Hassan Whiteside is out for the Houston or for the Miami Heat tonight. Okay, they're going up against Chicago. If you go, oh, damn. This is not a guy that's probably going to play, but I'm going to use him as an example. If you were to use, if for some reason Cristiano Felicio was announced, well, they're two different teams. Udonis Haslem was announced the starting center for the Miami Heat. And we knew that we were going to get, 30 plus minutes in a soft matchup. Well, at $3,000, he doesn't need to do a lot. You know, if he can get you 15 to 20, you're going to be happy with that in tournaments. You know, that's 20 is, you know, 6X, basically, 6.5. So that would be a case where if extreme value opens up, then yes, I can see, you know, getting away from a balanced roster and going and having that kind of balance out, because then you're talking about paying 15-6 for two players, which is basically like paying $7,800 per player. And then you can balance out the rest of your lineup. Where on, like we said, FanDuel, you know, it's more of a stars and scrubs approach. You know, and you're only making balanced rosters, you know, depending on the slate, but you're only making balanced rosters, you know, to be different. and to get a different ownership pairing between your two point guards and your two shooting guards and everything else. So being balanced on FanDuel is actually contrarian, where Stars and Scrubs on DraftKings is actually contrarian. But on DraftKings mostly, I don't pay, unless it's Russ on a shorter slate. Like if Russ was on tonight's slate, I would probably put his exposure at about 10% in my script. I would be severely underweight on him just because of the fact that, you know, a balanced approach happens to be more successful over there. And we've seen it all year. So he hit the nail right on the head, and that's a great, great observation. And I was wondering if anybody that had played on multiple sites in the Army had actually realized that or not.
Hmm. Fair enough. All right. Next question we got here is from Chris PLK21, who feels that Sam Decker is a black man. I had a fantastic discussion with that yesterday. But he would like to hear a bit more about the late night hammer process. To be specific, when you're just picking one to pick one, and when it's nice to go all in on one. I've seen nights where the top lineup was from early games by a mile, and nights where I'm bumped hard by a mix of early and late picks. I know high-paced games are a no-brainer, but when do you recognize traps? 3-4s, back-to-back, dysfunction, like with the Bulls right now. All right, so this is a two-prong question here. So, and I think, and we did have another question here too. I saw earlier it came from Nape, so we'll kind of combine the two since they kind of go there. So I'm sorry, it wasn't from Nape. It's from Wojo73. The damn Braves logo screwed me up. But he says here in his question, could you guys spend a little time on Vegas? For instance, is it better to target a team like Cleveland today, who's at -15 with a high over under? Where if things get out of control, the starters sit or drop down to, say, Washington at -3.5 or Milwaukee -4.5, expecting a closer game with a decent total. All right, so we'll go back up to Chris's question first, and then we'll kind of tie in what Wojo said here. But, you know, obviously you want to avoid, you know, teams on those 3-4s, back to backs, over your guys that are, you know, freshly rested. We'll take Russell Westbrook, for instance, the other night at Utah, who had a full 4 days off before his game there against the Jazz. And, you know, yes, while it didn't look like a great matchup, that 4 days certainly helped him. Going in the other direction, yeah, it's certainly a huge detriment to a lot of these teams. We saw, you know, how the Lakers fared last night. We saw how, you know, both teams on a back-to-back last night with the Thunder and Dallas, how it, you know, kind of it was very choppy there at the beginning, and then, you know, in the fourth quarter, you know, everybody started to kind of finally pick it up a little bit. But these things do matter. I know Keith likes to preach, you know, we don't predict blowouts, and yeah, I typically don't like predicting blowouts when, you know, picking my players, but I do think it's very something that we should be very aware of. Now, I will say last night I predicted heavily the Jazz would blow out the Lakers. It didn't work out that way on the scoreboard, but, I mean, they handled them pretty fairly decently there in the second half. These are things that you're going to have to look out for in a slate, but we will certainly point them out for you. It's also not bad to know for yourself what's going on, but what are some of the sites out there that'll kind of point this out easily for you, I guess, besides ourselves, so that people can check this out beforehand?
The first thing I always look at is, you know, basically where a player has been or a team has been. You know, are they on a road trip? Is it an extended road trip? When was their last game? What type of travel was it? The reason why we, you know, were kind of off of the Lakers last night, and I'm looking here to see. But the reason why we were off the Lakers last night was their third game in four nights. They were on the back end of a back-to-back. They were traveling into Utah, which is the second highest altitude in the NBA, and they were coming off of a hard-fought battle against Portland the night before, which they expended a lot of energy. And I had said at the beginning, I'm like, you know, I've only got really, you know, one true target off of that game. And it turned into two, but almost three, but I only had one true target, and that was Lou Williams. And that's just because of the way that Lou Williams kind of, you know, he's a veteran, he's been through the ringers, he knows what he's doing and stuff like that. It turned into Ivaka Zubac as well, and that was because there was a blurb that came out from one of the Lakers beat writers saying that Luke Walton was planning on giving him more minutes. And when we got the word that Julius Randle was dealing with an illness and stuff, then I really, really started to like him. He was the high scorer for the Lakers last night at 29.5. Okay. So that's one of those things. And you just kind of go through that. We talk about teams going into Denver, playing on the back end of a back-to-back or 3-4. You know, the schedule kind of leans itself. We talk about sleep schedule or the Maw games, you know, where it's a built-in scheduled loss basically for some of these teams. You know, so as you kind of look through the schedule, where they are, first thing I always do is you know, on the Boomers Ballers cheat sheet, it has a 3-4, it has a back-to-back tool that I copy. And you know, like tonight, we've got Philadelphia, Toronto, Boston, and Chicago that are in 3-4s. And if you look at them, if this is a 3-4 road trip where they're all away, like all three games are away, then I really do kind of limit my exposure to them. Not because of the fact that I don't think they can't win the game or that it can't be close. It's just that, you know, the odds of there being, you know, more of a dominant fantasy scorer or fantasy performer it's reduced. And especially if the guy's going to be chalk, I'm more apt and willing to fade him. Especially if he's been playing heavy minutes throughout, you know, if it's these guys that play 35, 37 minutes and stuff like that. As far as the late night hammer, the reason why we talk about having a late night hammer in the NBA is because we have people that will load up on the East Coast games.
Because they're hoping for power outages all over the West Coast.
That, and they're making sure that they don't get hit by late scratch. They're making sure they don't get hit by late scratch. So there's a lot of different variables into that. The crazy thing is that, you know, when you look at it, guys that are questionable on the West Coast, generally, unless we know or we get a lot of word throughout the day that they're going to be in, they tend to go lower owned. So I don't mind taking shots on those guys, you know, if I'm building multiple lineups. But the West Coast games are usually higher, faster paced. You know, you've got Portland, you've got the Clippers, you've got Golden State, you've got, you know, Sacramento, Phoenix. These are all faster paced teams. And more or a faster pace means more possessions for, you know, your players, and generally means more fantasy production. So it's kind of one of those things, like, and we've seen it. where, like, if they have – if there's multiple games on the West Coast, just stacking those games, it sometimes outperforms the main slate. And we try to point that out from time to time when there's situations like that where we can attack like that. But, like, say, like, tonight, okay – one of the things that we've been doing with relatively good success is attacking the Memphis backcourt with guards. Well, Portland has two really good guards who are now all of a sudden all-star snubs going against a place where we like to attack that the public doesn't. The Portland ownership is going to be very, very low on the main slate because of the fact that they're going up against Memphis. You're going to find more guys on, or more people on Mark Gasol, on Mike Conley. You're even going to see possibly a Tony Allen inflated ownership tonight. Zach Randolph, if Jamichael Green is looking to be out. You know, you're going to find guys like that that are more highly owned than guys like Damian Lillard, guys like CJ McCollum. So that's one of the advantages of having a late night hammer, especially when you can attack it with low ownership.
Yeah, I dig it. Now back to Wojo's question, kind of looking into Vegas. Now that, you know, for me, I've always been able to spot it, but explaining it, definitely a lot more difficult, but that's okay because, you know, you kind of have to start to spot these things as well too. So, I mean, not to be a homer, but typically, you know, I'll use this as a basis, but, you know, with the Nets, for instance, whenever I see their opponent is not at least 200 on the money line, it raises some flags to me. And look, this is something that's been absolutely productive for us all season long. If their opponent isn't over 200 on the money line, that means Vegas isn't giving them the respect they deserve in terms of winning the game. I mean, look, the Nets are by far the worst team in the NBA right now. So, yeah, the money line is the one thing that I look at. Now, the money line, that doesn't necessarily work out for each team. You kind of have to gauge what, you know, what that number is for the team that's favored. So, for instance, the Rockets tonight, okay, they're a minus 245 favorite on the money line. You know, they're going against Philly. Now, this is a lot tougher than it used to be because, you know, obviously Philly's getting a lot better. The Rockets haven't exactly been playing the best basketball either of late themselves. So, you know, that number 245 looks a little suspicious to me. I figure on a normal day, the Rockets would probably be something like a 300 or minus 400 on the money line, something like that. But, yeah, I just in terms of keeping it a close game, I think that's where, you know, the money line really helps. And, you know, again, especially with teams like the Lakers, the Nets, and, you know, the Sixers are kind of starting to shed this from their skin. But even still, against a team like the Rockets, I feel like 245 is low. And then we go all the way to the other end of the spectrum with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're minus 3,000 favorites on the money line. They're going to kick the shit out of the Nets tonight. Like, there's no doubt about it. 15.5-point favorites for the Cavs, you know, minus 3,000. That's just a number that you could feel absolutely confident in. Me and Keith talked at great length today before the pod, just talking about, you know, all the low numbers on the money lines today. Now, I think it's good because we'll probably see a lot of close games, but there's not one that necessarily stands out above the rest. And again, I like looking at the money line more so than the spread because I feel like that gives you a true indicator of how close the game's going to be. I mean, look, we talk about this all the time too with, you know, just like a high spread, you know, it doesn't really mean anything, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you know, because points can change hand within the course of like 20 seconds. But that money line, I feel like, is more of a true indicator of how close a game we'll see or how well a team should do that night. So with the Cleveland Cavaliers, yeah, you're going to get production from your big three, but I would, and again, too, you got to think with the Cavaliers, they haven't been playing some of their best basketball of late either. So they're going to want to come out and really prove something here tonight. So I could expect a thorough beatdown. But again, you got to be careful because they might not see the fourth quarter. The Cavs, their superstars can still score the same amount of fantasy points in three quarters as, anybody on like Orlando could.
Yeah, and, I've learned, ever since we've been doing this, I've learned a lot about, Vegas lines and stuff. You've taught me a lot about, public betting and stuff because that's something that you used to do. And I've started to take more into it, more thought into it when constructing lineups and stuff like that. But one of the reasons why we popped off or that we started with, we don't predict blowouts is because if you try to predict blowouts or say like you set a hard, fast rule, anything over, 12 point spread, you just avoid. Well, then you end up missing those games that, say Brooklyn comes out for 3.5 quarters and they keep it, within 5 points. And then the Cavs end up covering. But, the big three have to play some extended minutes other than what you were kind of projecting. Well, I don't like doing that because then I feel like I'm going to miss some big games, and a lot of the industry, you hear a lot of other places go, you're always worried about the blowout. Well, really, honestly, how many times, if you were to just kind of track it, how many times does, besides the Warriors, how many times do studs not play in the fourth quarter?
Well, in all fairness, Stephen Curry the last 2 years, this is only one team in the NBA, but what was it? Like, he didn't play the fourth quarter in, like, I think it was an average of 23 games over the last two seasons. That's insane. Like, they're blowing teams out. But, again, too, you got to think, look, if it's a blowout, hey, these guys are scoring points to get there. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it's different, like, and when we get to baseball, we'll really talk about it because, you really don't care there either, even less than NBA. It's different, like, than NFL, where you're afraid to roster.
We look for the blowout in baseball.
Yeah, no kidding. In NFL, if you're rostering a wide receiver from, the Falcons who are playing the Browns, and you're rostering Julio Jones, who's kind of, has a history of getting nicked up, of course you're thinking long and hard about, whether or not you want to roster him because – yeah, he could get there in the production, but there's going to be such an easy time with them running the ball that you don't need to worry about. It's a good game theory move in tournaments to kind of think about it, because the Falcons, they could take the air out of the sails in the second half and just rely on, running the running game. But in basketball, in order for there to be a blowout, like for the Cavs tonight, LeBron, Kyrie, and Love are going to have to be a big part of it.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big thing. That's why I say I don't predict blowouts. Because it's very, very, very difficult to... because you always feel like you're on the wrong end of the spectrum. And I was talking about you've got situations like that where you always feel like you're picking wrong. Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper comes to mind. P.J. Tucker and T.J. Warren right now for the Phoenix Suns come to mind. We were all over P.J. Tucker last night because of the way he'd been playing, and it was a T.J. Warren night. And so you always kind of feel like you're on the wrong side. Well, the same thing goes for predicting blowouts. Brooklyn has... and you could correct me if I'm wrong, Brooklyn a little bit better than I do. Brooklyn has shown the propensity to kind of hang into games where we don't think they should be. Now, they might end up getting blown out at the end, but like we said, if we get 3.5 quarters, if we get 32 to 38 minutes or 32 to 35 minutes from the big three, then we consider that a victory. Now, what I am more apt to do is pay attention a little bit more to like some of the value, I'm more price sensitive in those games than other games, I should say. Being a tournament player, I care about price, but I care about price after I care about raw points and ownership. So it's third on my list as far as, you know, the pecking order. So for like tonight, for instance, you know, you've got the big three. You've got LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin are the three highest priced guys on this in this game. I'm more apt to pair Kyrie and Love together because they're 84 and 79 on FanDuel than I am to pay 10-8 for LeBron. You know, right.
Now although LeBron may actually literally dunk one of the Nets tonight instead of basketball.
Yeah, you know, I mean, LeBron's pissed, and you could play that narrative. But if I'm playing multiple, I'd rather play two. I'd rather play the cheaper two than, you know, LeBron paired with somebody.
Right.
So it's kind of just one of those things, you know, and we try to point that out either on the pod or in the articles and stuff like that. But as for saying I'm completely off of a guy or I don't like a guy because or, you know, I'm not going to like LeBron tonight because the Cavs are projected to blow out the Nets by 15. Well, no offense to the Brooklyn Nets there, Al, but the Cavs need to do something to try to get some of their mojo back.
Yeah, none taken. Don't worry. All the I've heard all the jokes already this season. So
yeah, that's kind of how we predict blowouts. So
yeah, and the other thing too. I mean, I don't really like today's slate in terms of picking out money lines that really stand out to me. But if you guys have any questions, of course you can always ask us. I feel it's going to be much easier to explain it on a case by case basis, just as opposed to the slate as a whole. But believe me, I will take the time. I love talking about betting lines in Vegas. So
yeah, there's no
you got my ear if you got that question.
Yeah, there's no hard and fast rule about, the Vegas line. It's experience doing it for a while, and I'm still not quite as good at it. And, I mean, I'll be the first one. If I have a question about anything Vegas, I go straight to Al, and he's going to tell you straight up. I mean, even though, I do this for a living and Al does this for a living and stuff, and we produce content for the DFS Army and everything, there's still things that we're leaning, and I'll say, hey, this is my thought on this game. What do you think? And he'll tell me if I'm on the right track or not. And so that's kind of how I have started to learn it. And it's different for every sport too, And we'll talk about, money lines come really, really, really big into play in baseball. So,
by the way, speaking of Vegas, my mentor, everything I learned, the first guy that I worked for in the business, he popped up on BuzzFeed, but for the wrong reasons the other day. They had a town meeting in my hometown of Bayonne, New Jersey. So I don't know if you Google BuzzFeed Bayonne, New Jersey, they had a town meeting because Muslims are trying to put a mosque in the hometown, and boy, this guy was against it. Just saying, it's a good watch. It's a good watch. You could see where I come from. Okay, anyway, let's get to our next question here. Dimitri, let's go with that one. We know him. I just don't know how to pronounce his name. One thing I'm still a bit unclear on is what positions typically feed into others. So is point guard and center? I screwed this whole thing up. All right. Now he's still a bit unclear on something, and then I'm unclear on something. So let's walk through it together. So saying, is point guard and center / power forward a good stack with a chance to feed off one another, et cetera, et cetera? Also, is there any kind of max players you would feel comfortable stacking on one team So I think that kind of falls into the Cavalier discussion. And then he's got another prong to this question as well. To take down a GPP on DK, it looks like 350 is the goal and about 400 on FanDuel. Do you look at players with the mindset of, quote, I need 7x value from Westbrook and 10x value from my low-cost guys, end quote, or do you just look at peaks and floors and try to build a high-floor team with a chance of a peak? All right, let's start it out with the stack at the top.
I typically don't like to go more, depending on how big the slate is, obviously. On a night like tonight, I typically don't like to go more than three on a stack. You know, the Cavs are a big one. You know, we've seen at times where the Cavs' big three has taken down tournaments. And that's always a recipe, you know, if they go off and somehow the Nets do keep this, you know, close for 3.5 quarters, that's always a recipe for success as long as all three of them are, you know, producing. We talk about guys that work well together off the pick and roll. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, and DeAndre Jordan, they all three work well together off the pick and roll. Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson work well together off the pick and roll. Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams, and Russell Westbrook and and Enes, I'm going to break my freaking arm on a chair canter. They work well together, you know. So, yes, typically it's point guards and big men that really do work well together. I've never seen this before in the NBA, but this year Fantasy Labs started putting out a correlation chart of how well players correlate with other players on the same team. And where it's not as important in the NBA as it is in other sports, baseball, hockey, you know, football, it's something that is so new that if we can attack it, it gives us that little bit more of an edge. And obviously it changes, you know, because a guy can come out and play 32 minutes, or he could be struggling or get into foul trouble and play 22 minutes the next night. So it is an ever evolving type of thing, but I typically like to stack usually point guards and centers if I am doing a stack, or guys with high usage. We talk about another good example is Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Okay, up until Evan Turner was inserted into the starting lineup, those were your two primary ball handlers. Okay, and then Damian Lillard would come out, you know, about midway through the first quarter, and CJ would stay in, and CJ would be your point guard when Alan Crabb and Evan Turner came into the game. Well, the way they're running it now is that Damian will still come out, and it'll leave Turner and CJ out there, and those are basically your two main ball handlers. So we're seeing Evan Turner's usage go up, because he can play make and allow Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to run off of the ball a little bit more than they were earlier in the year. So you can realistically, my thought process is, and we've only seen this for a couple games now, but you could pretty much play Lillard and McCollum and Turner all together, and theoretically in good matchups, be okay. It's still a new developing thing that I'm integrating, but the most common stack that I do with in regards to paying attention to correlation is the, you know, point guard or the main ball handler and the big man. Other than that, if I'm playing like multiple players from a team, I just try to tend to stack the higher usage rates and stuff like that. So,
Gotcha. All right. So, you know, again, a couple prongs to this question too, but so let's talk, I guess, just about the GPPs, you know, because we kind of talked about the max players there a bit in that right there. But with the GPPs, you know, trying to hit 350, 400, kind of those benchmark numbers that I think any of us would probably kill another man for. What are you doing here? Are you looking, you know, how are you building on that?
I go for three. You shoot for 350 on FanDuel. Shooting for 400 is unrealistic. You need either a lot of guys to go for 50, 60, or 40. What's 9 times 40? If you have every one of your players hit just 40, like 40 on the dot, you're looking at 360 on FanDuel. So that might be – that's a really good range or barometer. The higher price guys like Westbrook, James Harden – guys like that, I don't typically shoot for like a 7X, even though they can reach that. I'm generally shooting for 5, 5.5. But the value in tournaments, depending on how big the tournament is, you know, if I'm paying like $4,000 for a guy, I want the guy to be able to get me, you know, on a good night, hit me 35 to 40, but realistically get me somewhere close to 30. So I want, right. I'm looking for 6. And then you just start to do the math. You know, if I've got a point guard that can get me to 35, then I've got to get a point guard that can get me to, say, if we're shooting for an average of 40 per position, I've got to get a point guard that can get me to 45. Okay. So that's where you should go. You should look to pairings. So my center, if I'm shooting for an average of 40 per position, I've got centers tonight: DeMarcus Cousins, Marc Gasol, Joel Embiid, Horford, Brook Lopez, Howard, Plumlee, Vucevic. All of those guys have the capabilities of getting me to 40. But say I've got DeMarcus Cousins, and I've got him projected for, say, 55 points. Well, then I have a little bit more cushion to go down to a guy like a small forward where I want to pay down a little bit, that he doesn't need to get me to 40. If I can get that, then obviously I'm not going to pass it up. But he doesn't – I've got leeway there. And so I shoot for around that 350 to 360 mark. Knowing that if I do that, I'm going to win the internet. If it pays off, I'm going to win the internet, because even on larger slates now, with them tightening up the pricing a little bit on FanDuel, you know, we've seen the winning scores go down to, instead of the 400s, we've seen the winning scores go down to a 350, 360, you know, 375 in the shot where you've got, you know, 200,000 entries and you basically have to hit the nuts. On DraftKings, I shoot for 325, 350, right around that area. As far as my player pools. So yeah, you've got baselines that you want to try to hit, but it's not like a blanket value, like, oh, if they didn't hit X, they didn't pay off their value. Well, it's all relative to the slate as well, because if you sit there and you look at it and you're like, oh, well, nobody hit value last night. Well, then hitting 5X doesn't mean shit, you know. if you've got LeBron James and he, you know, he only gets to, you know,
let's say 38.
I was going to say 45 points, and he's the high scorer of the night. Hitting value doesn't mean shit. Like, last night, Nikola Jokic, Russell Westbrook were right there around that 60 mark on FanDuel, okay? And, you know, Nikola Jokic was a better value because even though he's 10-4, he was $1,300 cheaper than Russell Westbrook. But it all goes to position scarcity as well, because you could have gotten Rudy Gobert for 83, and he might not have been as good of a quote-unquote value, but, you know, he's still important. You could still win with him. So I'm not, like, if a guy doesn't hit 5X, I don't really care. As long as not, like, every player in the NBA minus your guys that, you know, only play, like, 8 minutes aren't hitting 5X as well. So if it's a lower scoring slate, then you can throw the 5X out the window. But if we project to try to score 40 points per position, then that's where you can really start to excel yourself in your lineup construction. And you got to realistically ask yourself, if I pay for tonight, if I'm paying for, you know, at the point guard position, John Wall against Atlanta, can he get me 40? Yes. Can he get me 50 in this matchup? Yeah, that's probably his ceiling, considering the fact that he's on the road, but it's a really, 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 really good matchup, one of the best in the NBA as far as the point guards are concerned. So now I've got leeway to go down to a 30-point point guard, you know? And we talked about this a lot last year, but we haven't talked about it this year. Guys, instead of just blindly following the projections, when you're writing down your player pool throughout your process, throughout the day, kind of write in a number. What do you think that they could realistically, not ceiling, kind of a mid-range, not what their floor is, but their mid-range. What can you see that guy hitting? Just give it a round number. It doesn't need to be like 48.2. Just give it a round number, 45. Okay, he can reach 45 to 50. And then going through your roster construction, if it doesn't equal out to 360, see where you can, what you can do to get as close to 360 as possible. And it'll, when you start taking thoughts like that and start breaking it down, it'll really, really help you in your lineup construction and your thought process behind it. So, and you'll start to see it. And then go back at the end of the night and look. Say, okay, John Wall, I projected him for 50, but he only reached, 30. Why? You know, what was it? Was it based on his shot wasn't falling? Was it based on foul trouble? Was it based on minutes played? And if it's minutes played, why was it? Did he get banged up? You know, or was it like 3 and 4 back into back to back with a lot of travel and he played limited minutes, or was it a blowout, or, you know, stuff like that. Reevaluating your process each day or each night or each morning when you start to do this, it really does help you. And if you can't do it like the next night, keep track of it throughout the week and spend an hour and do it on the weekend if you can. So,
yes, indeed. Hey, just to break up the monotony, did you see the dodgeball game between the AFC and the NFC last night?
I did not.
Oh, my God. Fantastic. I didn't see it, but watching the highlights on TV right now, it looks amazing. Like, so much fun. I'm just saying, if we can get a DFS Army dodgeball game, just, you know. I don't know how that's going to be run over the internet, but we'll figure it out. We usually do. All right, we've got another one here from David Schwimmer. No, that's D.W. Zimmer. He asks here, this is regarding NBA cash game theory. Is it better to run out one cash lineup or multiple? Also, what are your thoughts on the best way to allocate 50-50s versus triple ups, quintuple ups, and GPPs? If I'm playing $50 a night as a cash player, how should I break down the dollar amongst double ups, triple ups, and quintuple ups? Thanks, my man.
Okay. First question is one lineup or multiple lineups. It depends on the slate. If there's like five games or less, I would apt more towards one lineup. You know, I, for a long, long time, I was always a, you know, one lineup. Put out your best, your most optimal lineup. You know, not worrying about ownership percentages or ceilings or anything like that. Just put out your best optimal lineup and all your cash games. That's double ups, 50-50s, and triple ups in that, and head-to-heads in that, okay? Because I want to either have the chance to win all of them, and this might just be me, or lose all of them. Now, what you can do is just, like, evenly split them up. We talk about the ladder system all the time. And I've been really having a lot of success doing two lineups on FanDuel. And every lineup I make on FanDuel automatically goes into, you know, a double, a triple, and a quint. They might be lower, but if I hit min cash on all of them, then it's going to basically pay for that lineup and the other lineup plus a little bit of profit, okay? My goal is to hit one of my lineups out of the night, one of the two. And so if I hit both, it's a bonus, and that's when I really kill. And then if I hit both in the top like 5%, then I'm just smashing. But if I only hit one for a min cash, then I'm at least getting all my money back. You know what I'm saying? I'm surviving for another day and maybe a little bit of profit depending on the buy-in levels for your tournaments, okay? That would be how I would attack cash games right now because of the mass amount of information, I guess is what it would say, that a lot of, there's a lot of overlap in cash games in NBA because everybody's got an optimizer. And, I mean, you can go to Grinders, you can go to Monster, you can go to, RotoWire, you know, Fantasy Labs, us, everybody has an optimizer right now.
Mainly
so,
us.
That it just, when you're looking for, you're talking about, you know, finding teams or finding trains in these single entry double ups of like, you know, 10 people sometimes. And that's in every double up. So enter double ups at different times throughout the day. You're going to get more of a range of, players you're playing against. Now you're going to find some of the same names, but you're also going to get more of a different names, and it'll kind of break up the, not every cash line is going to be the exact same. So if you're just there on that fringe of being a 50% play, then, you know, you're more apt to get there in some of them than get there in none of them. Also, your double up should be your highest dollar amount. So, like, if you're paying 50, then go like a $10 double up or a $10 50-50, a $5 double up, maybe a $5 triple up, and a $2 quint with a $2 GPP or, you know, something to that effect. But the contest where you have the best odds to win, like 50-50s, double-ups, those should be your higher dollar amounts. That way, if that's all you hit, then you have a better chance of profiting. And that's basically Chop's ladder system broken down in my words.
Yeah, and, you know, you just break it down from a you know, from a human standpoint. I mean, you're going to spend more money where you have a chance to win, the better odds of winning. You know what I mean? Like, I play craps a lot. So, like 6 and 8. Those are probably my numbers. You know, I'll do, you know, some evens and, you know, in the mix in there too. But that's where you put more of your money, especially even if you're playing roulette. You know, if you're going to go black or red, obviously that's a 50-50. You're going to put more money on the black and red than you would on, you know, any of the numbers there in the middle of the field. So, look, the higher the risk, the less money you're going to spend, the less the risk, the more money you want to spend. It's
unless
pretty
you're
simple.
Just absolutely just batshit crazy like me, and then, you know, I'll play, you know, $65 to, you know, $100 GPPs and put them in $10 double-ups. You know, just to and my whole thought process with that, and, you know, guys, do as I say, not as I do. My whole thought process of that is I try to soften the blow. You know, if I do, because I do take chances, I don't know how to build a chalky cash game lineup, per se, but I do take chances. And, if both of my lineups bomb, then, you know, I just want to soften the blow. You know, I'm not looking to always profit. I mean, that'd be nice, but, if I'm going to lose, then if there is a way to soften the blow, then that's what I end up doing. And like I said, do as I say, not as I do. Bankroll management is probably my weakest area. So.
Ditto. I'm like Drake. Just spend it all till I – what is it? I don't even know what the line is. But he always talks about horrible money management in his rap, so – that'll do. All right, let's get to our next one here. Jay McHawes. You know, it would be cool, like, if everybody's name here in the Army had that thing in the dictionary where they tell you how to pronounce it.
Oh, yeah.
That'd make things a lot easier and make me sound a lot smarter. Just saying. But, yes, Jay McHawes asks here. He's got a White Sox avatar if we want to, you know, diverse in that way. When constructing 1 to 3 hybrid lineups a night, do you game stack or try to spread the wealth? And what is the best way to know when game stacking, when players in your lineup will negatively affect each other? Bledsoe and Booker, we can go to now, but tonight is Antetokounmpo and Dellavedova in the same lineup, not going to work. Harden, Ariza, Covington, Noel. You know, which of these guys are going to correlate well? And I guess the bigger question is, how do we know if they're going to correlate well?
It used to be you had to watch the games. You kind of had to watch, you know, do they take
in
away
a world?
Do they take away from each other when they're on the court at the same time? Now in basketball, like we've said, it matters less than in other sports, but there are players that do take away from each other still. But it doesn't mean that, you know, both of those players just can't have the same game. You're just talking about having a cap on, you know, whatever their ceiling could be. So there's the answer to that question. Now, the first one was, how do you approach building three hybrid lineups? I build a kind of a cash game type lineup and take maybe one risk, where I play a lot of chalky guys. That way, if the chalk hits, then obviously with my core as well. That way, but if the chalk hits, then I'm not dead. Now, that's one of the harder things for me to do because I find it very, very hard to play the chalk. It's not always something that I'm good at. I'm good at identifying. I'm just not good at sticking with them in my lineup. It's one of my weaker areas. And just because, like, I don't ever, especially in tournaments, I don't ever see like an advantage of playing a guy that's going to be like, if I would have known, who was it the other night that was 80% owned?
Oh my God. Curry?
Noel.
Yes.
Nerlens Noel was 80% owned. And he did okay. He did pretty good. I mean, I think he got 35, but it made me throw up in my mouth when I saw that he was 80% owned, because I hate it. I hate it. There's no upside. So because what if he goes for 35, what do? I just stay even with the field. Now, in basketball, I tend to play higher owned guys at a cheaper price than that we've seen production from on a more consistent basis, like in Nerlens Noel, than I am with guys like who was the Chicago Bulls? Jerry Grant? One of the Grant brothers.
Jerry Grant.
In Portland. You know, he was min price and he was chalk and he ended up going off and having like a career game. Well, he hasn't
had via six steals.
Yeah. And you did something else. You look into why did he have a career game? Okay, well, he had this or he had that. You know, something happened that was.
He was on HGH.
Something happened that was not, you know, in his normal game repertoire. That you can basically say, okay, he just had a good game, and you tip your cap and you go on to the next day. We like to talk about guys like, you know, we like to talk about rostering guys when they're sneaky, not when they're chalk. Because, you know, if we roster the night before Nerlens Noel went for 35, he went for 45. And he was 27% owned. That's the ownership range that I like playing value guys in, is the 25 to, you know, or the 35 and lower. Because then if he goes off and goes for 42 plus, I'm gaining an advantage on 70% of the field, you know, 65 to 70% of the field. But if he duds, then I still have a shot. Not a good shot. I'm not going to win, but I still have a shot at cashing. If Nerlens Noel...
Totally, there's a chance.
Yeah, if Nerlens Noel goes off for 42 at 80% owned, and you have him, whoop-de-doo. You're still not getting an advantage because, especially in tournaments, because they only pay out, say, at most 20% of the field or 25%. Say you had a 1 out of 4 shot at cashing and they paid out 25% of the field and he's 80% owned. Guess what? 55%, you still have to beat the other 55% with the rest of your plays. So that's where I'm less apt to play, you know, a chalky guy. So I'll start one roster with a lot of chalk and then I'll do another roster that's completely different. Like, it has nobody from that first roster in, but it still has guys that I like that I'm willing to put in a core. You know, that way if, or at least the chalky guys that are in that first roster. That way if the chalk doesn't hit, then I've got one that's really, really, really alive. And then if there's a game or two that I like that's, or three that I like to, you know, kind of narrow down in game stack, then I'll do that. You know, a total of 220 or above. The Houston-Philly game looks like a game stackable game. Boston-Orlando looks like that's, you know, a game that, you know, you could game stack as well. So those are the options that I kind of work with when I'm building three lineups. And another thing is I don't work off of game totals. I work off of Vegas implied team totals because, you know, like the Cavs tonight, they're 15.5-point favorites. That total is 228. But, you know, sometimes you'll get that total to be say it was a 210 total. Well, that means that, you know, the opposing team is scheduled or is being implied to score less than 100 points, and I don't want that on my roster, you know?
Right.
So, like, looking at games like tonight, you know, the only team that's scheduled to score less than 100 points is Miami, at least right now. So what I can do is I'll go through here and I'll go, okay, I want some Cleveland guys. That's usually the big three. I want Houston guys. That's Harden, you know, guys in there. Boston, Atlanta, San Antonio, Indianapolis, or Indiana, sorry. Charlotte, Philly, Toronto, Brooklyn, Chicago are all scheduled or all implied to score over 105 points as a team. So I can narrow down and eliminate half of the teams in on a larger slate just by going by Vegas team implied totals and still be competitive. Because you can still find low on good value plays in on you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Amon Shumpert is a big one. He's been playing well lately. And he's still cheap. You know, and that gets you exposure to a very high team total, the highest on the slate, and at a cheaper price. So, and it gets you off of the chalk value as well. So,
yes.
I mean,
always what we want to do.
Yeah, and remember, guys, they're $4,000 for a reason. They're not just like, it's not just magically that, oh, I've been performing well, but this is a pricing error, and I'm only $4,000 now. You know, no, they're $4,000 for a reason. And one of the major keys into these algorithms that the sites put out is minutes played. And if they're $4,000, if they're playing a lot of minutes, they're not producing. And if they're, but most of the time it's because they're not playing a lot and their value because there's an injury that's opened up a situation for them, i.e. Willie Reed.
Willie Reed.
Yeah.
All right, so we kind of, I missed this, but it kind of ties into a lot of what we've been talking about. But Lazaro, the 29 Green Bay Packer avatar, he is saying, you know, when it comes to lineup construction in NBA, are there certain players you should focus on stacking together, or is it just to find the best players for that night and try to put the best lineup together? I mean, I feel like we kind of cover that a couple times throughout the pod today, but anything to, you know, say specifically to that?
No, I mean, like I say, correlation doesn't matter quite as much in NBA as it does in other sports. So I'll build, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 lineups throughout the day, and I always try to screenshot them. If you're working on a computer and you've got time to throughout the day, or, you know, even on your phone, screenshot them and go back and start looking. You know, look through them. Look, you know, for what, you know, you might have missed. And always don't just make a decision and take a guy and, like, change your lineup when it gets closer to lock just to change it. Always yeah. Make the decision based on new information. You know, if you sit there and you're like, oh, well, I really liked Cody Zeller tonight. Okay, well then don't get off of Cody Zeller. If you're like really, 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 really liked Cody Zeller, don't get off Cody Zeller unless there's information that applies to it that makes you rethink it and makes you get off of it. Because, I mean, there's been tons of studies and stuff about this, but they always say, like, what is it? Your first impression is usually the correct one or your most accurate. So just because, like, there's an injury out and a guy gets a bump, you know, and this is one of the reasons why I put the adjustable minutes in the domination station. Go through there and adjust the minutes. If you don't have an idea of what it's going to bring a guy to, I've got two rules. One, always be conservative. Two, ask. Ask myself or Al or David, and we can probably give you an idea because we've probably seen this situation before. But, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, you start to learn. But that's another big one, is don't make a decision just based on information. Make a decision based on information that applies, you know, just because a guy is going to be in the starting lineup doesn't make him a good play, because now he's got to fight with usage for with the guys on the first team rather than the guys on the second team. And trust me, when you get a guy sliding in with guys like Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, they're not giving up their usage just so Jeremy Grant can get his. No, no.
Oh, hell no.
That ain't happening. So, you know, just because a guy's going to get a start, you know, we usually outline the situation and say, okay, this guy is a good play. You know, either because we've seen it before or because of the situation that's going on, or, you know, whatever. But we'll tell you, too, no, we're not going there, even though this guy does it. And it's not always going to work out. Sometimes it's going to bite us in the ass. But,
yeah.
You know, we're making this decision based on the information that we have. And, one, you pay us for us to give you our decisions. But, two, we've seen a lot of it. You know, we've seen guys that come into the starting lineup and work well as a secondary complementary piece and can produce. We've seen guys that come into the starting lineup and absolutely shit the bed. You know, the Indiana Pacers shooting guard position at the beginning of the year was a prime example. We wanted whoever was coming off the bench and getting the usage with the second team. And if you're in the air about here's a more recent one, Tobias Harris and John Lewis. For the Detroit Pistons. We hate playing Tobias Harris when he plays with the starters. Because now he's got to worry about Reggie Jackson, KCP when he was healthy, Marcus Morris, and Andre Drummond. We hated that. We loved, but John Lewis can still outperform his salary-based expectations when he's with the starting lineup. Tobias Harris, he's more productive when he's with the second unit. So just because a guy's starting or not starting doesn't mean that they are a good or not good play.
Oh, my God, yes. We can go on with that for days. This is actually a good question, and I'm happy because I had time to break down the screen name, and I know how to pronounce it. So we got three more questions left, okay? But here we go. This is a good one. So I'm thinking my Zeus 6, I couldn't get it. I got it. Now, let's break it down, kids. Dictionary style.
My T.
Zeus.
Zeus.
6'6". Mighty Zeus. I got it.
Mighty Zeus 66.
I got it. I finally got one. All right, so he says, by the way, that's hella fancy, but I love if you could address the process and roster construction for someone like myself who barely has an hour to put lineups together, then may say by the time I get home. Maybe even a quick way to research through the content here. I ask because at work, I really don't have access to info to prepare for the day. Thank you. And he put at the beginning, he says, who barely has an hour to put limos together. So you know, he fixed that. And he said he wishes he could put limos together. Don't we all? That would be something else, just rolling through town with a couple limos hooked up to one another. But I feel like this is probably the most important question. And, you know, whether people are willing to admit it or not. But, I mean, hell, sometimes I'm spending so much time on the article, I don't even have enough time to, you know, research everything. But what do you do in this situation?
This is where I would start. Is because, I mean, you know, we both have responsibilities that we have to do, you know, in the final moments leading up to lock. We answer questions all the time and stuff like that. So, you know, on days like today where there's 10 games, you know, I'll scale back my volume because I know there's going to be more questions and stuff like that. I generally cut off about 20 minutes before lock. Now, I'm still building things and going through things as I'm answering questions, but I'll generally cut off about 20 minutes before lock unless there's, like, you know, a major announcement that, you know, we need to address. But if I have an hour before lock, then I want to make sure that I know what teams are implied to score the highest of that day. So going back to Vegas team implied totals, okay? And if there's a 10-game slate, I want to eliminate automatically half the teams. Boom. Unless there's somebody that I really, really know that I want to target. So, like, tonight, I really know I want to target the Memphis backcourt. So even though Portland isn't in the top half of Vegas team implied totals, I still want Portland exposure for a couple reasons. One, they're the late night hammer. Two, that's where we like to attack the backcourt. So that's one of those situations that, you know, I'll automatically go. But you're right. That's where I'm going to start. I'm going to eliminate on a larger slate half the teams, and then I'm going to start going through and I'm going to build a roster based on my knowledge. A roster, just I'm going to go through and just build a roster based on my knowledge without even reading or researching anything. And then probably what I would do is go read your article, because you give an entertaining, fun breakdown of usually what's going on. And you can gather a lot of information. Now, sometimes our opinions differ, but not, I would say most of the time they're pretty much very, very close to each other.
Yeah, it's typically like one or two players, really, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I know our research processes are very similar, and, you know, we have a lot of similar thoughts on how everything's going to go. I mean, you know, that's what makes the pod and everything work so good. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, of course there's going to be differences in everybody. I mean, people that listen to us are going to have differences. It's fine, you know, and some nights you're going to be right, some nights we're going to be wrong, but make no mistake about it. We're always trying to put you in the best position.
Yeah. And then the next thing I'm going to do is, after I read that, I'm going to go check out my cheat sheet and kind of see, you know, where some plays right line up. And through all the time in this, if you're trying to do this on the, like, on the road and being distracted, then just don't play that night. Give yourself an hour. If you only have an hour, give yourself that hour, that last hour right before lock. Okay. And kind of jot down notes. Like, you don't even have to, like, write detailed notes. Just like Westbrook or Cantor injured, LaVern scheduled to step in. Or LaVern bump or whatever you want to call it, you know.
Bump it up.
And then, you know, go through there. And then go through my cheat sheet and kind of, you know, read everything in that as well. I don't just go through there and grab some plays or my highlighted plays and just plug them into lineups, because trust me, there's sometimes the win or go home plays, I nail every single one of them and they do better, some nights than all the green plays do. All my elite plays, my core plays, it's just, you know, how it happens some nights. And, and then I'll go to the domination station, I'll run a couple lineups, and then I'll kind of merge all of them in with each other and attack it that way. But you want to do it where you have no distractions. So the phone's put away unless that's what you're using, the TV's off, the wife isn't worried about you, the kid's not trying or grabbing at your ankles and stuff like that, because that's when you're going to start blowing through your bankroll and making mistakes, unless that's how you do it already. So that'd be the only way I would do it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one. I mean, look, having the domination station now certainly helps for, you know, a lot of people that can't do what they need to. But I know, you know, a lot of our guys are always asking questions. So right then and there, I could tell, you know, no one's just satisfied with using an optimizer, especially last night. And look, that it's nobody's fault what happened to Dwight Powell last night. But, you know, I was guilty of throwing him in one because I said, oh, Dwight Powell's everywhere. All right, let's go with him. But, you know, yeah, that's not Dwight Powell's fault. That's just, you know, he didn't even get into the game really until the end of it there. So, you know, that's just and who would have thought that with the Mavericks running like an 8-man rotation and the fact, you know, Pierre Jackson goes down early. So, you know, you think, oh, maybe they'll slide a couple of people up in the positions. No, it was just a complete F Dwight Powell night last night. But again, this is the NBA. You're going to have stuff like that happen to you. I think there's a lot of different things out there. Definitely check up on the injury updates. The Roto Grinders player app is definitely one that I would recommend having. You know, you can kind of scroll through there real quick and see, you know, who's going to be out for the night. And, you know, sometimes they'll give you a little synopsis of who could get the bump. Might not always be right, but at least, you know, who's out, and you can kind of sort of break it down that way. I think finding injury replacements is on the top, top three things in DFS. I mean, that's how you kind of get this, you know, 7 to 10x value out there from guys that are, you know, very, you know, they're very cheap that have huge spots, like a Norman Powell tonight, who's very capable of putting up a monster number at a low price. So that's very important. So, you know, don't just go right off of the domination station, although it has been automated pretty well to the point where they kind of factor those sorts of things in. So, you know, combination of all those things should work. All right, we got two more left before we are done. Let's get to P.T. Jetson. P.T. Jetson. Oh, man, I'm going to catch a lot of flack today. I already know it. Let's go. Well, Pierce Johnson is his name. I should have been doing that for all of them. But anywho, he says, good morning. One thing I still struggle with is trying to figure out which contest to enter. I definitely prefer GPPs, but I feel like I struggle to pick the right ones. I typically do 2 to 3 lineups a night and put in around $15 to $20. It'd be nice to hit a huge payday, wouldn't it? But realistically, I'd still prefer to stretch out my bankroll. Appreciate everything you do.
Yeah, this one's difficult because if you're just starting out, obviously you want to stay away from the multi-entry.
Right.
You know, if you've got, say you're going to build 3 lineups every night, if you've got $9 in extra cash just sticking around there, then yes, throw all 3 of them into, you know, the shot. Because that has it's a very top-heavy payout, and don't expect anything from that, okay? I'm just saying. But if you do hit the nuts, you're going to kick yourself for not having it in a $3 tournament. I really like the $12 5-entry max tournament on FanDuel. I really like. I like all the single entries because you can take a little bit more chances in there because a lot of the bigger guys, they just, you know, throw in a cash type roster. You know, they're just kind of looking to cash. I would rather, you can take some chances in that one. I like the 3-entry max. Obviously, those would be where I would, unless you have the capability of throwing in 10, 15, 20 lineups into a tournament, then that would be where I would put my focus as far as tournaments to enter.
You know, what I like around Christmas time, I really had to cut back what I was doing, you know, just in terms of how much money I was playing and everything. So I ended up finding the mini rebound. This is my favorite contest out there. So it's single entry. You go, it's what, 49 entries in it, and they typically have it for each slate. But single entry, 49 entries, and then the top 9 payout, which is fairly good. I mean, it's I can't do math right now. That is almost 20%, just below it, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even more. But I feel like that kind of gives you the best chance to win money. Now, the top prize in that is $150 in that. Now, even with that, so like I said, the top 9 get paid out. So I believe it's from 4th to 9th is $30. So you're getting a little more than 50% in terms of your return. You know, so $12 entry, $30 return on the minimum payout on that is still pretty good. And I feel, too, you get, 49 people. If the chalk, doesn't go off or something like that, or, one of these guys you don't have, ends up dudding out, you have a really good chance to win. So those are good. I actually like those better than, the 100-man contest where people can put, multiple lineups in there. I don't know what the max is for the $100 payouts, but I like the – okay, I like the payout structure for, I believe, three, if I'm not mistaken. But I do like the payout structure there for the mini rebound. So then you got that. If you don't want to do the mini rebound, you got the mini shot. That's a $3 one that could, pay out. I remember I hit second place in one of those one night. $3 entry got me $120. I mean, that's a really good payout for people starting out, too. So My recommendation would just be to go into contests with less people. Sure, you're not going to, hit those big paydays, but if you are looking to stretch out your bankroll, just go into some of the smaller contests.
Oh, absolutely. It
definitely works out a lot better.
And if you've got the ability to do it, and you can go up and pay, $65 to get into the three entry max, charge. Just to give you an idea, you're going to play 191 people to where the top 40 pay out, but the top prize is $2,500. Well, you don't have to play, 600 people to get $25 or $2,500.
No.
You only got to play 200. So, I always like playing up to play less people. I feel like I'm, especially on FanDuel, I feel like I'm at a, I'm good enough to where I can do both, but feel like I'm good enough to where I can take care of that.
Sure.
Not have to worry about who a pro is or who isn't or anything like that. So.
Ufkum. All right, so I believe this is our last question here. It comes from Stu Gatz, not the one from ESPN, just our own Stu Gatz. But he Stu Gatz 49 to be exact. But he asks, how much – if I can click on the damn thing. How much? Another good question. See, I believe we kept the best three for last. How much do you factor in DVP into your player choices when you finally – or how much do you factor in DVP into your player choices, and are you looking at season-long, last 10 games, last 5 games? And then he asks, too, everyone talks about having a process, but between your article, my article, the Free Squares article, and the spreadsheet, the Domination Station, what should the process be after we have all of that already? So a two-pronger.
Okay, let's get to the process one first. That's where, after you read all your information, and by this time, I've already put in my placeholder lineup, and I always use my placeholder lineup. Basically, I don't just go in and put a bunch of $3,500 guys in, because I've said this before, but with me having kids, if shit hits the fan, then I can't get to it, then I'm screwed, and it's just a waste of night. I want to have my placeholder lineup actually have a fighting chance to where if I can't get to it and something happens to where I'm not drawing dead. And usually, like I said, your first impression is pretty good. I use that as a barometer of what my first impressions of the slate are. Just going based off my knowledge. And then I'll do all my research and everything, and then I go back to it. But I always have referred back to my placeholder lineup because I can draw the conclusion of why I liked a guy originally and then making it new based on the new information that I have now with, all the information that we've given, why I either do or do not like this guy as now that I've done my research. And then I just go through and I build some lineups. I play with different strategies. I play with, paying up both spots at point guard, on FanDuel, paying down with both spots, going a high and a low, going a mid. And I just try to kind of find, where I rank guys and, what I've done on making sure they're surrounded by my core. and based on really what contest I'm in would depend on how much of a chance I'm going to make. Like, the reason that we created, I created the winner go home player was not to throw him in your 100 man or your triple up or your cash game, was to throw him in a qualifier, a $3 shot tournament where he's literally going to be around 2 to 5% owned and can give you a 0 or a 28. But, you know, I'll throw in one of those guys depending on the tournament. But, I mean, you've just got to find out what is right for you. The lineup construction part of it is, you know, very, very odd. Like today, when I sit down to actually build my lineups and everything, I've got my placeholder in, but I'll build another one that's just an all value lineup. And I'll the top two value plays at each position, you know, that way I have them there and I know exactly where I can go to. And then I just start upgrading. Okay, let me put in my core. And then, okay, now that I've got the value in the core, where can I go upgrade? So the lineup construction part is something that takes a lot of time to, you know, in conjunction with the optimizer, with the domination station and stuff, you can kind of tweak it to how you need it to be tweaked. So that's me. The DVP, I don't take into it account a ton. I do look at it to get an idea of places I might want to target. But I look more now at DRPM, individual matchups. The problem with DRPM is if you don't know how a team plays, or you don't have the ability to go back and look on how a team plays, because sometimes a team won't just go, you know, point guard for point guard. They'll go point guard for shooting guard and match up because maybe sometimes the point guard is a better defender than the shooting guard is, i.e. Houston Rockets. And you'll go back and you'll say, okay, well, Patrick Beverley's going to be on their best offensive threat in the backcourt. That's not always the point guard. Sometimes it's the shooting guard. So that is an advanced step. But if you just go plain Jane starting out, looking at DVP, not only for the season, but for the last, you know, 5, 10, 15, and 30, you know, getting an idea of, okay, these guys really, really struggle against point guards lately. This is where I can attack possibly in tournaments. And then just reading what we talk about in Slack and listening to the pod. That's another way to do it too.
DVP is interesting because I feel like the more recent you get, it could be a little more misleading because, you know, the guys could be on a West Coast road trip or something and just the whole team absolutely sucks. And then that make them look like they suck. And then you take a look at the team defense against them and it could just be misleading. I like to look at the whole scope of it overall. Although, and, you know, I kind of might sound like a little bit of a hypocrite here, but in saying all that, what I like doing is going on StatMuse. And I like to see – I'll do a query for – you know, we'll look. So let's say, you know, we're trying to target point guards against the Chicago Bulls, which has been profitable since Michael Carter Williams has been the starter. So typically what I'll do is I'll pull up a query. It'll say point guards, game log, FanDuel points, or I'll put most FanDuel points against Bulls since, and then like the one I've been doing recently has been since January 1, 2017, and I'll pull up all the big games from there, and then you can kind of see how it's been going. And if you don't want to do most FanDuel points, you could see how things have been going, you know, from a game by game basis lately. and see, okay, well, they, you know, these guys scored a lot of points here, but not so many here. And then you kind of dig in and see what happened. Was it a bad night? And typically you'll see the stats underneath. So you can see if, you know, how many minutes he played. He only played 14. He was in foul trouble. So that was why. And then, you know, it gives you a different outlook to it as opposed to DVP, where you don't get who the teams played and, you know, why certain situations are. You just get the number of saying, okay, these guys are third against point guards in the last, you know, 2 weeks or whatever. You don't get the whole story, but I feel like StatMuse gives you a lot more of that.
Yeah, StatMuse is a great tool, and we use it all the time. You see us posting things and stuff in there from there all
you
the time.
You know, those graphs with the creepy drawn-in photo on the bottom? Yeah, that's StatMuse.
Yeah, that's something they just started doing this year, was the characters and everything. So, right. But yeah, StatMuse is a great tool to use it. So.
All right. Well, we hope we answered everyone's questions here. Definitely more of a campfire sort of thing, a little fireside chat for the people today. But again, if you guys have any more questions, you already know you can hit us up in the Slack channel if you're a DFS Army member. If you're not, you can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at 14A.Walsh, Keith at Boomers DFS Daddy. Hopefully we can lure you into the Army if you're not already. But if you are going to do it, use the promo code PODCAST. It's going to get you 20% off each month. It comes out to $16 per month. Really can't beat that with any sort of stick. That's all I got. Anything to take us into the weekend?
No, let's have some fun. And remember that this is supposed to be fun. Like, very, very little of you are doing this for a living, if any of you are at all. Let's have some fun today. That's one of my biggest things that I think that we need to get back to. Don't tilt if a guy hasn't played, or, you know, as we saw with Eric Bledsoe last night. Now, not everybody has the capabilities of Eric Bledsoe, but as we saw with Eric Bledsoe last night, just because they're not producing right now does not mean that they won't produce and still be a very good play by the end of the day. You know, let's temper the temper. Yeah, let's temper the tempers a little bit in the Slack. play vent, please.
There's a lot of anger, a lot of anger.
Yeah, well, there was last night, and rightfully so. You know, that's one of the great things about it, is it gives you a place to kind of vent and tilt, and stuff. But, let's hope that tonight is not one of those nights.
God, no. All the monies. All right, folks, we will see you in the Slack chat, and, you can hear our beautiful voices on Monday once again. I'll content out for both days since there's no NFL this week. So. You got me. And then, of course, the Domination Station will be loaded. Keith will be in Arkansas over the weekend, so the inmate is totally running the asylum.
Yeah, I'll be answering some questions and stuff, but it won't be a ton. It's long overdue for me taking little KD down to see his great grandparents. So.
Oh, yeah. Get him, KD. All right. We will see you guys later. Peace.
He's out.